Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 2nd to 22nd, 2017 in communities across Canada. The RVF series, which showcases the diversity, duality, and dynamism of Canada's Francophone communities, is brought to you by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and this station. Please stay tuned for the next half hour for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie. Visit ncra.ca/RVF for more information on the series.
CFYT 106.9 FM, The Spirit of Dawson, presents Les Dawsoniennes, a radio documentary about the Francophones of Dawson City.
Un, deux, trois.
In the northwest corner of Canada, some 500 kilometers south of the Arctic Circle, at the confluence of the Yukon and Klondike Rivers, and not far from the Alaska border, you'll find the town of Dawson City, Yukon. Used for millennia as an important harvest area by the local Trondikhwechan First Nation, who are still at the heart of this community, Dawson leapt onto the world stage as the site of the famous Klondike Gold Rush of the 1890s. Now designated a National Historic Site, Dawson has preserved that chapter in its past, not only in the heritage buildings that dominate the townscape, many of those now owned and maintained by Parks Canada, but in the collective unconscious of the town itself. The local economy is a mixed one, based on mining, tourism, and the arts, and you'll still find many people opting to live a wilderness lifestyle. Dog mushing is a popular sport, and out in the bush there are trappers and hunters plying their timeless trade. Here, and in nearby settlements like the off-the-grid community of West Dawson, which is across the Yukon River, or down the North Klondike Highway a bit in Henderson Corner, you'll find a diverse and fiercely individualistic population. Among those is a small but vibrant Francophone community. But the French Dawsonites, les Dawsoniennes, are not a segregated enclave of language and culture. Dawson's Francophones follow the same pattern as most newcomers to this northern town. They came for a visit and ended up staying, finding something in the land and its people, a certain je ne sais quoi, if you will, that called to them.
I came to move here in 2003, but first I came in 99 also in August. And it was forest fire season, and it had a really strong effect on me. And I came back for the next summer for mushroom picking season, which come after forest fire. And it had an even stronger effect, and I always wanted to come back. And in between, I had a child. I thought it would be a good place to come and spend the summer with my child and, you know, enjoy the nature. And then I've been here ever since.
I was hiking across Canada because I always been attracted by this country. As I'm from France, so it was a very different country for me. And for some reason, I always wanted to go north and see the north, and because I've seen it on TV back in France, and I wanted to see that by myself. And back then, I could barely speak English, so it was kind of funny. But I loved it right away, and yeah. It was mid-June, if I remember right, so it was sunny, 24 hours daylight. I thought it was very pretty. I loved the river that is running through the mountains around, the people, the community. I found a job right away. Yeah, I decided to spend the summer here. I was just camping at the campground, and everything was easy, people were nice, I don't know, it was something. I loved it right away.
I was coming back from New Zealand, and going all the way back to Quebec from there was longer and didn't have so much money, and I've heard that it was easy to find job and work in summer. Being far can like be seen like as a bad thing for some people, but I feel like take away some limits that you have down south when you live in town. And I've been living in different town, for example, Montreal. But I just feel like the world is a little bit bigger around me.
Well, I really love the wilderness here. And especially, it's not as busy as a city. Now I go in city and I just freaked out because I have too much people and the cars and everything. So I'm really used to be here now. And I really prefer the winter here. I love the winter here and to be with the community, to doing activities with communities and coffee house and different activities that make here. So yeah, I really love here.
I think it's the freedom, the wilderness, everything, you know, the scenery is quite amazing. So people are drawn to that. And it's quite a close-knit community. Everyone's friendly. You have a sense of belonging to something when you live up here, I think. So I think that's probably the draw that brings a lot of people, not only French-Canadian, but lots of people up here.
The history of Francophones in the northern Yukon predates the creation of the territory, and throughout Dawson City and the Klondike region's past, including the storied Gold Rush era, Francophones have played an instrumental role. Alex Somerville, director of the Dawson City Museum, describes some of these people and events.
The history of Francophones in Dawson City predates Dawson City. There have been Francophones in the Yukon, actually, even before there were sort of the prospecting gold seekers that we so associate with Yukon history. Some of the first Francophones, Franco-Canadians of significance in Yukon history, the names that show up, Nolasque and Emily Tremblay, were a Quebecois couple who came to the Yukon in 1893. As prospectors, and they remained in Yukon. And Emily Tremblay is one of the people credited with being the first white woman over the Chilkoot, and earned for herself much more than her husband Nolasque a place in Dawson's sort of mythological imagination, because after the Gold Rush, she opened a clothing store, a dressmaker shop on the corner of 3rd and King, and that was one of the properties decades after she passed away, but that was still standing when Parks Canada came to Dawson in the late 50s, and that they have since restored and repainted prominently on the front, Madame Tremblay's. Also in the 40-mile region where the Tremblay's were mining was another miner named François Buteau, who earned for himself the title King of 40 Mile. He was an early example of sort of an increasing settler presence in the Yukon River Basin, when, though he had been a miner, decided that there were so many miners and prospectors around 40 Mile that there was an easier and better living to be made doing something else, and so he became a blacksmith. And that's all before Dawson City even gets started. And then when you have the Dawson Gold Strike and you have the huge influx of people coming in, you find French Canadians. In fact, when you think of how few Canadians, full stop, there were in the Klondike during the Gold Rush compared to Americans, the French Canadians among them were a disproportionately high number, and remained, even many of them remained in the Klondike after the Gold Rush. During the Gold Rush, there was even a community among the many communities in the gold fields called Paris, Yukon, and it was a wholly Francophone community out there. There were three brothers named Fournier who came from Quebec to Dawson just at the tail end of the Gold Rush, and they ended up operating three roadhouses out in the Gold Creeks, and they formed sort of this part of an early 20th century, late 19th century French-Canadian community. I was looking actually through an album yesterday and found a photograph of a pique-nique de la journée de Saint-Jean-Baptiste. And that was inscribed right on the negative, scratched on the glass. It was a Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day picnic, and there are 50 or 60 people in this photo. And incidentally, the photo has a photographer's credit in the corner, and that's from Larson Duclos. And Joseph Duclos was one of the French Canadians who contributed to this turn of the century life in Dawson City as a photographer. And then in 1901 One, you have another central figure of early 20th century Dawson life from Quebec, Gédéon Pépin, who came to Dawson from Montreal and started out as a watchman at a gold mine. And he was a very small man, so that didn't work out really well for him. He eventually got a job as the sexton at St. Mary's Catholic Church in town, sexton and organist. And he was a terrific musician, was an organizer of a lot of Dawson City's volunteer and social music life. In 1910, founded the Dawson City Brass Band. There's a beautiful photograph of the whole band on the steps of the administration building on Fifth Avenue in their uniforms with their drum and their instruments.
As the 20th century took hold, all across Canada, an Anglo-centric mindset began to predominate. For First Nations, this was the period of the reviled residential school program. But other ethnic groups also felt pressure to suppress their cultural identities. In the Yukon and in Dawson City, many Francophone families gave in to societal duress, forsaking the French language and taking Anglicized versions of their French surnames.
Starting, I think, at the beginning of the 20th century with the French-Canadian communities, I'll call it assimilation. There was a really intense kind of assimilation after the turn of the 20th century. To my knowledge, none of the Fourniers' children were Francophone. In fact, a good example, Bernadette Fournier married Armand Saint-Jean in the 30s. And today, that family is Saint-Jean. And you see that with Saint-Jean and Saint-Jean. You see that with Boutier and Boudelier. It's another name. There was also at the turn of the century, Amédée Dubois. I think the Dubois today go by Dubois, but they spent many decades as Dubois. Actually, here's another great example. Frank Burton, François Burton, from New Brunswick, was known as Frank Burton, and he was the dentist, and he married Laura Thompson, and their son, Pierre Burton, is probably one of Dawson's most famous sons. And so there was a real assimilation of the strong and of the pronounced Francophone culture of the Gold Rush and turn of the century into Dawson's Anglophone culture.
Towards the end of the century, however, things began to change. Quebec's quiet revolution sparked a rebirth in Francophone pride, not just in La Belle Provence, but in communities across Canada. The federal government, under Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, declared in 1971 that Canada would adopt a multicultural policy, recognizing and respecting diversity in languages, customs, and religions. In 1982, multiculturalism was recognized by Section 27 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and the Canadian Multiculturalism Act was enacted by Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. That same year, l'Association Franco-Yukonaise was established, and by 2002, an official policy of bilingualism, in addition to the promotion of native languages, was adopted in the territory as part of the Yukon Act.
You start to see this new influx of Franco-Canadians and Quebecois to Dawson City. And these people are you know, like, They can live a Francophone life. They're bringing a French speaking society and French speaking social circles back into Dawson City again after a long sort of soft pedal period.
I can tell you that in the winter, if I don't work like full time, I speak French more than English. So my English is a little bit rusty right now. Living the cabin life with the family, for sure, but also I have friends who live in West Dawson. There are a lot of Francophones there, too, and in Henderson Corner. So, yeah, that friends and family.
Mm-hmm. There is a big community of Francophone. I think you can live your life in Dawson. I want to talk about the Yukon because I've only been living in Dawson. So I think you can. It's possible for you not to speak English until you reach the general store, and that's the only limit I see. You can speak only French, I believe, in this town. that's not what I want to do. Otherwise, I would have stayed in Quebec, but it is possible. So there is a lot of French speakers.
How many people speak French in the community? It's quite amazing. In Vancouver, you could barely find people who could speak French. Services, going to even trying to get a passport and everything. No one could speak French and everything. And you come up here and I go do my banking in French. I do lots of things in French up here. So it's quite fantastic.
Here in Dawson, I will admit freely that I speak more French in the Yukon and Dawson than I have in Ontario and Quebec combined. It's very, I guess maybe because it's a small town and the people who are Francophones really celebrate their Francophone-ness. And, you know, there's activities, there's dinners, there's movies. And so I feel like here it's useful. Like there are places in the Yukon where people, and I think like people at the store don't even know that I'm an English-speaking person because we just communicate in French. So I find here it's very vibrant.
One of the reasons I decided to move up here was in part because of the very strong and present French community. I get service in French more often in the Yukon than I did when I lived in Ottawa. So I find that incredible. And even in Dawson, everywhere I go, people just they hear me speak, and very often they'll just switch and just talk to me in French. So there's a very vibrant French community here, and I think it has a very bright future.
We French Canadians love to travel, so we're all over the place. And I guess that once you find something that you like, you're just going to stay and try to build roots and everything. So, and it's magnified here because it's such a tiny community. So you can see, like in the 1,500 people, you can see who's French, who speaks French, who wants to speak French and everything.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised to see that there was a lot of French speakers here, which helped me a lot. It wasn't so hard because I could always find people to speak French with if I needed to. And I liked also the fact that people were ready to help even if they couldn't understand me, which is not always the case everywhere in Canada.
In 2014, it was reported that the Yukon had become Canada's third most bilingual region, behind Quebec and New Brunswick, with 13% of Yukoners identifying themselves as speaking both French and English. Overall, according to the Yukon Bureau of Statistics, the French mother tongue segment of the population has increased over 60% in the last decade. Of course, one of the ways to ensure more French is spoken is by starting with the young. At Dawson's Robert Service School, a grade 5 French immersion program is compulsory. Teacher Donna Lazancic explains how the program works.
Okay, so I teach the French intensive program, which begins in grade 5, so it's students who are the age of 10. What happens is they give you training, and they give you what I call the Bible, and it's a book that has units in it. So there's the units on the family, animals, sports, those kind of things. So you do a different formation every week. So maybe you're talking about how to express your personal opinion, how to talk about your family. So right from the beginning, we speak French to them, just French. So it's similar to an immersion program in that they are only speaking in French. There is a lot of repetition. So if I ask a question, they answer the question by sort of repeating the question. So if I say, est-ce que tu peux fermer la porte? Oui, je peux fermer la porte. So there's much repetition. They try to make the program as authentic and real to the teacher and the students as they can, because they feel that engages the student more. So what we do, we usually begin with the family unit. So I talk about my family. I give them sort of a model of my family, and then I ask them, do they have a brother or sister? They can eventually, by the end of the family unit, describe the members of their family who are in it, extended members of their family, what they look like, what their personalities are like. And there's sort of mini projects throughout. And that's how they do the evaluation. So there's no testing on things like conjugation of verbs or vocabulary lists. In fact, they state that there shouldn't be any. Normally in a classroom, you might have anchor charts or posters. With this program, they say that anything that you make in terms of what you're going to put on your walls must be, first of all, in full, complete sentences, which is why you ask them to repeat as well when they answer you. Everything must be in full, complete sentences, and there's no translation. So I don't say, une pomme is an apple. If I do anything, I will draw the picture. So if I draw a picture of an apple, they then associate the picture with the word, but they're never ever learning the English word for it, or never doing, an apple is une pomme. I find the program really, really, really good. It's I enjoy teaching it, for one, because you really get involved personally with them, and you know a lot about them, they know a lot about you. And I find that, like I said, even by the first week, they can tell you how many members of the family they have, what their ages are, that kind of thing. So it happens very, very quickly, because the repetition constantly, and you're constantly reviewing and asking questions on a daily basis. You do sort of a little review of, a little warm-up, and you might ask them, quel âge a ton père, or what is your, what does your dad look like, or something. So I find it's much better in terms of retention of the language and understanding of the language. In other programs that I've taught, sure, they can do the verbs, but are they actually using them in real life? No. Whereas here, you're learning, they say that you learn the language as though it was your mother tongue. I'm teaching it to you like your mother would say. If you made a mistake in whatever language you spoke, your mother would say, no, this is how you say it. And so that's how this language is taught. And so it sort of sticks in more. They're able to speak quicker and retain a lot more.
We all already have the enriched French program here for grade 5. And it's really helpful. And my kids really had lots of benefits from it too, even if their first language is French.
It's grade 5 to grade 12. They learn French. What it's pretty amazing, it's that grade 10 to 12, they are pretty good to speak French. And I can have a conversation with them in French. It's pretty amazing for me to see that, to see how they can improve.
There are also new programs being introduced that target children at an earlier age. Elaine Michaud of the Yukon Francophone Women's Organization, L'Essentiel, explains the group's purpose and outlines a new French language program for preschoolers newly introduced to Dawson City.
I started working for Les Essentiels in May of last year, so it's still fairly recent. So as you've mentioned, it's a women's organization, so French-speaking women's organization. So our goal is to, first of all, organize workshops, different events for women. It's mostly in Whitehorse, but we try to branch out, which is why I'm here in Dawson today. And we also try to represent the interest of French-speaking women within the French community, but also in the society at large. So that's mostly what we do. And one of the ways that we're trying to improve the lives of French women is working with their children as well. One of the ways that we can grow our community, make sure that French is still spoken in the Yukon in 20 years from now, is to make sure we have young people who still speak French and enjoy it as well, not see it as an obligation, but really embrace it. So that's the kind of programs we try to foster. And our most recent one is I Speak English et J'aime le Français. So it is a toolkit that we launched for service providers in early childhood. So we're aiming for children between 0 and 4 years old. And the toolkit is basically to introduce French to those children. Some of them come from mixed families, so one parent is French, one parent is English, or some of the kids will be going to French immersion or French school, and they don't necessarily always have a lot of chance to practice. In the home, very often what happens is that you're going to speak English. If one of the parents speak English and the rest of society speaks English as well, it's kind of easier to switch that way. So we're trying to introduce French in other areas and help out parents as well, who are, I'm sure, trying to introduce French to their children, but it's not always easy. Parents work, everyone's busy. So if we give more resources to service providers that work with children, we think it's a great way to start introducing French. The toolkit is basically 10 workshops for children. So there will be, there's one story. So we have books that are bilingual to make sure that it's easy as well for service providers to animate those workshops. And the flashcards are relevant to, of course, the theme of that story. There's included some songs, nursery rhymes. So it's very it's a varied activity program, and it can span on 10 weeks or more, depending on how the service providers want to use the program. And we're pretty excited about it. So it's been rolling out Whitehorse and now in Dawson as well.
For my son, I think Well, he's pretty good in French, but the English is much stronger for him, especially written and reading. And yeah, English is stronger in English. So, yeah, we have to work hard. We have to be engaged about that. You cannot just hope that they work it out on them, like on their own. So, but I also have two daughters, and it's a bit different for them. It seems they're more interested in French. Maybe just languages is easier for them.
So, does a quirky and remote little northern town have any lessons to offer the rest of Canada on the subject of linguistic coexistence? It's hard to say. Certainly, unlike in the crowded urban centers, there's plenty of elbow room here for everyone. At the same time, though, many of the formal Francophone programs, services, institutions, and celebrations available seem to be centered on the territorial capital of Whitehorse, which has two-thirds of the Yukon's population. No, in Dawson City, the vibrant Francophone presence and its holistic relationship with the rest of the community are much more organic. Maybe it's because the harsh, unforgiving environment forges an instant bond among its peoples. Maybe everyone just shares the same appreciation for the land and the unspoiled wilderness around them. Or perhaps the egalitarian and tolerant spirit, the message of live and let live and opportunity for all, seems to be in the town's DNA. At any rate, les Dawsoniens are welcome here, and they are thriving. By the Dawson City Radio Society and CFYT, The Spirit of Dawson. Written and directed by Danny Dowell. Made possible by the National Campus and Community Radio Association and the Rendezvous de la Francophonie Project. Thank you to Valerie Dubé, Aude Saint-Louis, Marie-Ève Béguin, Alex Somerville, Ludovic Antoine, Driss Adreo, Elaine Michaud, and Donna Luzancic. Special thanks to Les Centelles, the Robert Service School, the Dawson City Community Library, and the Dawson City Museum.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, presented by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and The Station. To learn more about the RBF series and the National RBF Celebration, and to send us your comments, visit ncra.ca/RBF.